Happy Thursday, everybody. I know today is not typically the day that we post podcasts, but hunting season is starting. The guys are on their way to North Dakota. I'm actually in Colorado. Ted's meeting me here later on this afternoon, and we're going to be elk hunting starting this weekend. So now that hunting season started, we'll probably have some podcasts where we're trying to keep you guys updated. So we may be posting more frequently just to keep you guys updated on what's going on. So on the way to North Dakota yesterday, I think the guys must have just been getting a little bit bored, so they decided to record a podcast. Fair warning for those of you that are concerned about things like this, the audio is going to be a little rough. I doctored it up a little bit in the editor, but they're on the road, so there's a lot of strange ambient noises. And like I said, I tried to fix it as best as possible, but it's still a little funky. So just bear with us there, but the guys are going to be talking about just kind of what it takes to actually get on the road and go hunting, kind of some of their plans as far as once they get there and they're actually hunting. But I won't talk too much longer. If you're looking to save some money on some of the products that we use, you can check out the description of this podcast and you can see those promo codes there. Those promo codes can save you anywhere from 10 to 20% on some of the products that we use. So thanks for tuning in this week and good luck to those of you that are starting to hunt this weekend. I'm going to pass it over to Aaron, Jake, and Dylan.
All right, guys, we are on the way to North Dakota to go deer hunting. Actually, we're in North Dakota right now.
Just got into North Dakota and purchased our licenses.
Yep.
Licenses, is that a word?
Yes, our licenses. We're now licensees. We're here, we're getting ready to go deer hunting. It's me, Aaron at the Hunting Public, Jake, and Dylan is back here too.
Dylan's our intern. And we're also in the vehicle, so if the sound quality isn't as good as what it usually is, that's the reason. We just have a little microphone and our camera here we're filming, but we figured we got a couple hours yet that we're going to drive, might as well do a podcast talking about our plans going into the hunt.
Yeah, we're about 2 hours from camp right now, and we're staying in a very remote part of the state, which is probably not real hard to find in North Dakota. There's not very many people up here at all.
Yeah, especially once you start going west. The further you go west, less people.
So it's mostly whitetails, it's river bottom type ground, a lot of cattail marshes, and even some, what'd you say, sandhill type stuff?
Yep, similar to what, like, you would have seen Zach's hunts in Nebraska the last 2 years, so those are the sandhills. But yeah, mostly, like, kind of rolling sandhills with trees mixed in, and then, like, wetland cattail marshes, and looks like they do a bunch of just like mowing for bales and stuff like that in random places on the map is what it looks like.
The main thing that I want to touch on is like just getting here, because I think that's something that we don't talk about very often, and we've been in the truck now for 10 hours, so bear with us if we sound a little bit crazy at this point in the journey. But a lot of folks, including ourselves, don't think about all of the crap that goes into just leaving the dang house and getting on the road and getting on one of these trips.
It's kind of like, this is our first trip of the year, so it's like everything's a little bit rusty. After you start doing it, or I guess if you think about it a little bit more, you can really knock out a lot of the things that are kind of a pain, the growing pains of starting to travel the hunt. You realize the things you need and things that you don't need to. There's a lot of things I think we brought years ago that we ended up never using, so like we just don't bring those things anymore, you know? I think you tend to overpack when you start doing these trips just because it's good to have something if you need it. And then over time, there's stuff that you realize that you don't need.
Nah, that's probably true. I know there's probably stuff even on this trip that we don't need.
Yeah.
But I currently have two kayaks in the back of the truck right now. And we have our big Cabela's tent in there. That's what the three of us are going to sleep in tonight whenever we get to camp. And I don't know, we got my bow in here, my arrows, everybody else's equipment is in the camper with Grant and Greg. And they won't be in until tomorrow night. Because last night we went to hook the camper up and the lights on the camper didn't work. Oop, we just lost the mic. It's all right, all's well. So anyway, last night we started packing at like 3:30, 4 o'clock, and went to bed at 11:30, got up this morning and kept packing for another hour before we finally got on the road. And Greg and Grant were still packing. So just one thing after another on these deals, trying to make sure that you don't forget something. And we're not the most organized bunch, so going through all of our stuff takes forever.
And then on top of all just our hunting gear, we have all of our editing stuff because we're editing on the road, and all of our camera gear and just extra stuff that you'd never need if you weren't filming and trying to edit your hunts on the road. That also takes up like way more space than probably even our hunting gear. Not way more space, but an equal amount.
Yeah, Greg had to take his truck to the auto parts store this morning to try to figure out the light situation on the camper. They pulled it up there, and then Ted took the camper out to get the bearings, you know, re-greased on the wheels and the rear axle, or well, in the axle of the camper, I guess.
Yeah.
So just lots of little bitty stuff that has to be tended to before we even lift off, so to speak.
What route were you willing to go with this? Because like, I guess right now what I'm thinking about is like how easy it would be if you were just one guy that wanted to go do this by yourself, or even just two guys. If you were just one guy, you could do that. You could do all this in the Smurf, probably. You could do a trip like this out of the Smurf.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're two guys, you could probably do it out of a pickup truck, no problem.
The saddles don't take up any space at all. And the Greg, we still have our lone wolf stands, actually Dylan and Ted's lone wolf stands. But I believe both of those are in the camper in Greg's truck. We might have one of them in here. But we threw the saddles in here.
Yeah.
And they don't take up any space whatsoever. So if you're by yourself, you get your climbing system and a saddle set up, and that's about all that you're going to need, and your whatever clothing that you're going to wear to the woods. A couple sets of clothes.
Yeah, on an early season hunt like this, like I fit everything that I need into a tote. One tote, as far as, except for my bow, basically, is the only other thing that I really need to bring.
One thing I would definitely say that you need to bring is a target. That's super handy. Like out here, we're going to be out in the middle of nowhere. If we have an equipment issue, we're going to have to shoot. I mean, even if we don't, we're still going to want to shoot our bows every day. And having a target at camp is super handy for that. Whether it's a little block or
reassures that confidence.
Yeah. Something you can shoot broadheads into is the main thing.
Yep.
But really, other than that, you're bringing water and food.
Yep.
And that's about it. Actually, me and Greg both have these used Toyota Tundras now with the camper shells on the back. And if it was just us, one or two of us going, we might just sleep in the bed of the truck.
Yeah, for sure. I think Greg might plan on doing that at some point. I know, like, that's what Dave Owens does, though,
right,
on his Pinoli project. Taking a step back, though, I guess one thing that, like, I've heard people mention, and it's a really good idea, and it's something that we don't do, and it probably will be an issue for us at some point, is either having, if you have an extra bow, or just having like an extra bow string, or just extra things for your bow in case they were to break.
Yeah.
Like, I know a lot of people mention just having an extra bow string. Like, I know a couple buddies of mine that just have like a spare bow when they go on these trips, because like, if you pay $1,000 for an outcome, you're going out west, and all of a sudden you're out in the middle of the mountains, and then your bow takes a dump on you, then you're kind of out of luck. You're going to waste a lot of time driving somewhere to get that fixed and whatnot. So if you can afford it, just having spare stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think a misconception too is that we go on these hunts and we just pull in there and then we immediately, you know, we're hunting. And that's not the case. It usually takes us at least a couple days to get acclimated, to get camp set up, to get familiar with the area, find out, in this case, we got to figure out how far the nearest gas station is,
yeah,
so that we don't get in a bind in that way.
And you could look at, like, we should have just looked at that on a map ahead of time. I'm sure Greg has. He's the one that kind of coordinated a lot of this trip. But, like, that's all stuff that you can be thinking about before you even leave. Like, I mean, it's pretty easy to type in on Google gas stations near whatever little town that you're hunting by or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and also to that point, it takes us a while to get everything set up, and then much longer to drive around the area. This particular location we're going to is huge. It is very remote. Access is difficult. And in this part of the country, especially early season like this, there's minimal pressure. I mean, from what we've heard from the local area biologists and the area managers that we talked to on the phone about this area, is that they'll drive around 2 or 3 days during the first week of archery season out here in North Dakota and not see another person on public land. So I don't know what we're going to run into. I say that now, and then we'll get there, and there'll probably be people everywhere. But it looks like it's a very low-pressure area, which is different than what we're used to.
Yeah.
You know, we're used to being able to look at pressure and actually try to predict it and use it to our advantage. And in this case, nobody can even set foot on the hunting area until noon on Friday when the season opens, and it's Wednesday right now. There's another deer right there. I think it's a buck standing up there along the edge of the corn. Do you see it?
I think you're seeing things.
I don't think so. I'm getting pretty excited though. So I guess that's just some background on what we're dealing with here, but we're gonna camp tonight, wake up tomorrow, scout all day tomorrow, and then the season opens the next day, Friday. Tomorrow's Thursday, season opens on Friday at noon. We're gonna spend all day tomorrow scouting. And Jake already said we have to get up at daylight in the morning to go and cruise around and scout. Now we can't go onto the area to scout, but we can drive around it, and it's huge.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just thinking of our past hunts, like when we were in Nebraska, which is a pretty similar hunt to what this is gonna be like. I think we actually saw way more activity in the morning. Like bucks were on their feet a lot longer just because it stays cool longer into the morning. I mean, it actually heats up quite a bit during the day, and it doesn't really start to cool off till like that last hour, maybe in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But it'll stay pretty cool, and especially this week, like it looks like we have really good temperatures, like highs in the 70s for the most part. Like it's gonna stay cool for a couple of hours in the morning, and I guess what we've seen in the past is bucks will be on their feet for two, almost 3 hours after dark sometimes. I mean, that buck Zach shot 2 years ago in the morning, that was
After daylight.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. That was 3 or 4 hours after it got daylight. So they're getting up and moving around more in the morning. And I think that's something I heard Jeff Sturgis talk about too. Just like it's scientifically proven that deer throughout the whole entire year, they move around more in the morning just for that reason, I would imagine, just because it does stay cooler.
Sure.
Think about the whole summer too.
Yeah, we're going to be dealing with summer, you know, late summer patterns still. It's so early, there's going to be some bucks in velvet still, I would assume, which is fun, but we have to hunt this time frame, this super early season, a little differently than we do the rest of the year. You know, mid-September, by that time they've shed their velvet and they're starting to lay down some sign, and they're moving around a fair amount as far as their patterns changing. So but like I said, they're leaving rubs. And right now, that's kind of one of the challenges with hunting early. If you can't get eyes on bucks that are in velvet, you're not going to find any fresh rubs yet, especially if they're not shedding that velvet yet. So glassing from long distances is going to be something we do quite a bit. And we've already marked some high points on the map inside the area.
Yeah, they're
just looking at topo.
Those sandhills, there are some high points, and that's kind of similar to what we did in Nebraska too, just getting on those and you can see forever. We got the spotting scope with us, and obviously we have our binoculars, but just there's also like a lot of flat marsh ground where it looks like on a map you can get into some trees just in the middle of a marsh and see forever too.
Yeah,
just because everything is so flat. So I think we're going to be able to observe a lot and then make moves based on what we see, because I think just going into this thinking it's going to be pretty low pressure, I don't think it's going to be hard to get eyes on bucks, and I'm hoping it's not going to be that hard to get eyes on bucks, which is kind of a change of pace.
Yeah,
compared to what a lot of people are used to.
I hope you're right. We're going to find out here pretty soon.
Yeah,
but
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I one other thing I would say on these trips is be ready to solve simple, stupid problems throughout, especially the first part of the trip, because we've just spent, where were we at, in Grand Forks?
Yeah.
We just spent an hour and a half in Grand Forks trying to find a place to buy hunting licenses. And we went to Walmart first. They didn't have any there. We called around. It was, we We went to Cabela's on the wrong side of the river in Minnesota, which was our own mistake. And it's not possible to buy a North Dakota hunting license in Minnesota.
Luckily, I figured that out. I said, hey, I just thought of something. We're on the wrong side of the river, so we didn't look too stupid and have to ask an employee for where we could get a North Dakota hunting license.
Yeah. Yeah, we messed that up. But anyway, we eventually found some licenses at Shields and bought them. But you never know what you're going to run into. Never been in this area. I've never been in the state before. So there's all kinds of different regulations here than there is versus other states. It's just a process getting here. I mean, and I've already forgot stuff. I was supposed to buy Light and Knox, and I've texted Greg, who's behind us a good ways, to ask him to buy some for us. So just one thing after another until we get there. Like I mentioned earlier, it is a process. It takes days before we're finally settled in and actually starting to figure the area out. So some people are more organized than us and they don't have to plan that in. But yeah, if you're like us, then plan for that.
If a guy was smart, you would just like a couple weeks ahead of time, you would just start a list of stuff that he's going to need and just start writing it down. Just have a checklist, and then when you're loading everything in the car, go over everything on the checklist, and then you should be pretty confident that you're going to have everything you need to make it through your trip.
Overall, though, these trips are not that expensive. No. I mean, especially if we'd have been driving the Smurf. Yeah. I've already been complaining about the price of gas in this truck, but if we were in the Smurf, I could drive up here for like $100.
And I was surprised how cheap the license was, the non-resident license for North Dakota. I guess I was always under the assumption that it was going to be at least $300, but what was it, like
$280?
$280, that's yeah, not really that bad.
And it's a long archery season, I think.
Yeah.
I think you can come back. I mean, if we were able to have any luck on this trip, we could come back in the rut and continue hunting on that same tag.
Chance at a velvet buck, you're in a pretty low-pressure state. Yep. We could also shoot a mule deer if we wanted to.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sweet.
Well, we just have a whitetail tag. We could have got an 80 deer tag.
Yeah.
And went mule deer hunting, but we just bought the whitetail archery tag. Either way, there's lots of opportunities up here. And on top of that, the area that we're camping has got water and electricity. No showers, but water and electricity. And I don't think it's cost anything. I think it's free. Pretty sure it's free anyway.
It's a good price.
Yeah, it's a great price. So if you pack all your food with you, throw it in one of those overbuilt, over-insulated coolers, I mean, that's pretty much all you need. I mean, you don't need a whole ton of stuff. If you're just one or two guys, like Jake mentioned, you could just hop in the truck and take off on one of these trips for a few $100, and yeah, that'd be it. And
I guess, like, I'm thinking about back before I was working with you guys, like when we would, me and my buddies would go on trips to Nebraska or wherever, like we would just find as many people as we can, because that just always makes the trip way cheaper. The more people that you have to split costs with, as far as gas, or if you're, like, we were going muzzleloader hunting in Nebraska, so we would just get a cheap hotel every night, but like it would only be like $10 a night because we had four or five guys with us.
Yeah, you just split it up.
So just get your buddies. If you got people that you can get to go with you, it makes it way more fun, and it also makes it more inexpensive.
Yep. This is your first out-of-state trip, right, Dylan?
Yep, first one.
What kind of questions do you have so far?
Not a whole lot. I mean, it's been pretty self-explanatory. It's just going to be cool to see the different hunting tactics, I guess, than the Midwest that we're going to have to do, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of spot and stalk, or at least a lot of glassing, where these areas we can see a lot more than the timber stuff that I grew up hunting. You know, like, I grew up in southwest Wisconsin, where it's all ridges, and like, if you can glass more than a couple hundred yards, you're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
So no, other than that, it's just cool to be out here.
There's definitely going to be some glassing involved. We got the spotting scopes, the binos, all that stuff. The good thing with this time of year is they're very patternable. You know, that pattern ain't gonna last real long, but if you do see them doing something one night or one morning, there's a good chance they're gonna be right there in that same area for at least a few days. So that's kind of that's somewhat different than your traditional Western type of a hunt. If you were hunting elk, for example, you might not be able to glass them in one little bedding area or something like that and expect them to be right there the next day. They move around a lot more than deer do. But
something that's worked really well for Zach, and I know, like, that's what Andre DeQuisto talked about as far as his bump and dump. It was more targeted around early season hunting when deer haven't been pressured a bunch, like they've been left alone, especially in the area that we're going all summer. Like Aaron mentioned before, like nobody can even go into this spot, so like they haven't been pressured at all. So if you go in and bump a buck in an area like this one time, like there's a good chance that they're probably going to be back, and that's something that we've seen over and over again, at least in Nebraska. And I know that that's what Andre always talked about as far as bumping up, and worked really well specifically during the early season like that.
Well, that buck that we bumped in Missouri a couple years ago, that was early too.
Yep.
And he came right back.
The one that crossed the river with all the stuff in his antlers.
Yep. So, I mean, that's definitely something that we may try when we're out here.
Yeah.
If we're not finding deer, you know, we're definitely going to be glassing, but then hiking, walking long distances.
Yeah. I mean, the buck that Zach shot the first year that we went to Nebraska for bow hunting, the reason that we found that spot, we went in to wind bump that area. It was midday. We were just trying to cover some new areas. We were on bucks in one spot for the first couple of days. And we felt like we had kind of pushed them out of there for a while. And so we just burned through this spot and said, well, let's just wind bump it, see if there's anything in there. And sure enough, Zach kicked out what he's almost positive is the same buck he ended up killing 3 days later, I think. And actually, I mentioned that we were putting a bunch of pressure on that other spot. Brody was in that same spot that morning. It was where we were hunting that big wide buck.
Oh, yeah, that massive
looking thing. Super big buck for that area. But Brody saw that buck and the whole bachelor group of bucks in that same spot, even after we had pressured him 3 days later, after we were basically 2 days after we were out of that spot. So they were right back in there too. They put up with a lot of pressure, I think, early in the season.
Well, to your point, they ain't been messed with.
Yeah. Before they realize they're being hunted, almost, is what I think it is.
This particular area, they haven't been touched for, I'm assuming, since last winter.
Yeah.
I think it's closed.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I don't think you can go in there, like, on foot.
Yeah.
At all. So these deer, and they hardly ever see people. If what these area managers are telling us is correct, and they don't even see very many bow hunters out here during bow season, then I would imagine that the deer are pretty lax.
Yeah.
Like they don't. And if you bump deer like that, they're gonna go right back to where they were comfortable at.
Yeah.
They're not gonna go very far. The trick is that it's remote. Like it's really, really big, and there's a lot of different habitat types within it. And I think they'll all hold deer in the different areas. But it's gonna be fun, you know. We may not have to go very far off the road at all.
Yeah.
But if we decide we want to, we can go for miles and miles on this place.
I'm curious to see, like you just mentioned, there's a bunch of different habitat types, like the sand, basically from sandhills to kind of smaller blocks of timber to cattail marshes. I'd imagine that at some point towards the end of the trip, we'll be targeting something specific. I just don't really know what it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't
either. To see what it's going to be.
The good thing with those sandhills, as we can see on a map, is you can get up high.
Yep.
We've already, that's one of the things we've been marking. I guess it's basically river that runs through the heart of this whole area. It's 30 some thousand acres or more.
Yeah.
And along the edges of the river, there's a lot of that marshy cattail type stuff with scrub brush and that. And then it blends into those sand hills that has that broken timber. But on the outside of all that, there's some shelter belts that lead out into ag crops. Lots of, looks like hay they're baling, alfalfa that they're baling maybe. Yep. So there's definitely going to be some big ag fields that these deer are going to. There's probably going to be a good chance that there's deer living on the public land, traveling onto private to feed in the evenings.
at the same time, I think there's going to be deer that are pretty much 100% public land deer that
It's so big that I don't know how there wouldn't be.
Yep.
And it looks like that there's fields like you saw earlier on the map that are cut or planted in the middle of the public land.
And so it looks like it's almost just ground that's high enough where they can get in and mow it and just get some bales out for cattle. Like it looks like it changes from year to year as far as the stuff that they mow and bale. And I think it's just based off of what the water levels are like that year.
I just really want to harvest a buck up here, man, because they're just bigger. Like, they're just freaking pot-belly pigs.
Yeah, we're in northern North Dakota, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not far from Canada at all. And North Dakota's got all kinds of good hunting all over the state, but especially up this far north, these deer are big-bodied deer.
Yeah. They got to get through those tough winters. I mean, it gets cold out here during the winter.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of meat on one of these puppies, Dylan. There's
going to be a lot of fat on them, too, this time of year.
There is. It's
going to be nice and marbled.
Ooh. Sounds good. Sounds delicious.
They won't be all rutted up and stinky.
Yep. That'd be all right. Yeah. So, just so long as we don't shoot one that's 4 miles back in there, which might happen. Who knows? But I guess the plan from here, we're going to camp tonight. We're going to get up in the morning. We're going to just cruise around and scout. We're going to do what we usually do, which is scout roads. We just drive around and we get familiar with the access points of these areas. Because don't just go off the map.
Yeah, and there's roads all through this public land, but if you look at them really closely, like a lot of them, you can't drive a vehicle through. And that's one of the things that's sometimes tough to tell on the map, is like where dead ends are at, where gates are going to be closed. Like me, Ted, and Dylan and Grant just went to Kansas because I have a tag for Kansas this year too, and I'm super glad we did that. Because like we would have wasted a lot of time driving around the first couple days. There's a lot of stuff that I was looking at on the map. Like water levels are super high there this year, like where basically creeks or rivers are up high enough where you can't even get through a lot of roads. And I have all that stuff marked on my map now, so I know to avoid those dead end areas is just going to make us way more efficient as far as spending time in the woods when we go out there in November. So like I'd say if you're planning a trip for next year and you have a free weekend, I mean that's what we did. It was just pretty cheap little trip. We went out there for 2 days and barely even got out of the car. Basically, we just drove around to a bunch of different areas that I had marked on the map, kind of all around the unit that I'm going to hunt. Now I have a really good idea of the spots I'm probably going to target when we go there in November. But it's just going to take all that windshield time, hopefully, that would have taken 1 or 2 days when we go there in November, and we just did it a week ago. So
yeah. Wish we'd have done that for this deal, but we got a day and a half before we could even hunt.
Which is nice.
Yeah. And we'll just go, we'll do the same thing on this trip. We're going to cruise all those roads, and we're just going to be dropping pins everywhere we go.
Yep.
Even throughout the middle of the day when we're not seeing deer. Yep. You know, in the morning, first thing, we'll obviously be looking for deer in some fields adjacent to the public, headed back in, because we can't go on the public yet. But then we're going to spend the rest of the day just driving these things and checking access and marking, dropping pins at potential locations. Then the next step is to glass tomorrow evening in some of those spots.
Something I did too when I was in Kansas, I left a lot of notes. Like on my pins, you can do that on Onyx. That way I remember why I left the pin there, because like it gets to the point where you have so many pins on your phone.
Freaking dots all over the place.
Yeah, you forget sometimes why you had them there.
Yeah.
So if you leave notes, it'll refresh your memory.
Yeah, we're going to be dropping a pile of them.
Yep.
Hopefully in the next day and a half here. It is a little bit weird not being able to go into the area and scout. I mean, we can drive around it all we want, though, and it's humongous. So hopefully we can get some long-range scouting done tomorrow morning, tomorrow evening, and then the following morning before we can hunt. That should help us tremendously. Looks like the weather's going to be pretty good for the duration of the trip. Not supposed to rain much, little showers here and there, but highs in the low 70s, high 60s, lows in the 40s.
Yeah.
Should be very comfortable.
It's gonna be beautiful.
Yeah, a lot better than Kentucky last year.
Yeah, it's gonna be comfortable sleeping weather too.
Yeah.
That was
my least favorite part about Kentucky.
We had to have a box fan. Or no, we had that oscillating thing.
Yeah.
We had to have that in the tent. I don't know how good this old Cabela's tent's going to smell either tonight, boys.
Yeah, that's all right.
This thing might have a little odor to it. Hopefully that's all right with you, Dylan.
That'll be fine.
Man, there's tons of ducks flying around.
Yeah, this is pretty wild out here. I'm excited.
Yeah.
But we'll give you guys an update here pretty soon. We're going to be hunting a couple days and filming a bunch of it for the deer tour. Hey, before we go, do you got any more questions, Dylan? You sure?
I can't really think of a whole lot.
Okay.
You guys addressed a lot. I guess maybe one thing that I was thinking about that you guys were talking about going to or talking to the local, you know, whether it's a game warden or a biologist, like just kind of where do you find that information? Because I know like when Grant and Ted and I were out in Colorado, we had a hard time trying to find some of the contact numbers for that thing. So like, I don't know, I guess just that would be my main thing. Is it
what
just...
I guess, Aaron, maybe you can probably answer this better than I can, but, like, I literally just type, like, we're on the way here, and we thought of a couple more questions, and I literally just typed in the name of the refuge that we're going to, and it gave me a contact number, and gave me to, which got me to a receptionist, basically. I told her what my question was, and then she gave me the number to somebody else, or she transferred me to somebody else. Basically, the area manager is what it sounded like he was, and now I have his number, and it sounds like he's going to be able to answer any sort of questions that we might have about the area. But
yeah.
Aaron, you can probably elaborate on that even a little bit more.
Yeah, you want to find out who owns the public land that you got in question first. Like, is it a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers ground, federal land? Is it National Forest? Is it BLM, state-owned land, etc.? You know, once you figure that out, then you can usually go to their website, their national website, and find some sort of contact info. That's usually where I start, is I just go, say, for instance, it's a national forest. I'll just type in, you know, the name of the national forest, and it may bring me to that specific page, or it may just take me to the main website. And I just go to the contact us form that they have there, and then shoot them an email. And call them, like, because sometimes you may not get an email response for some time, so I'll also call them, and like Jake said, they'll eventually get you in touch with the correct person that you need to be talking to about the area. And in most cases, they're extremely helpful just on basic knowledge of the area. And sometimes they can provide you with even more than that, but they can give you an outlook on the typical hunting pressure that exists there, you know, the amount of deer in the area, the current conditions, like, is the area flooded, for example?
Is there a big sort of disease that's spreading through the deer herd that might be something you want to know?
Exactly. Has there been recent sudden changes in any of the regulations that we need to pay attention to? All that stuff is questions that you can ask those people when you get in touch with them. It's just it's not so much about, like, which spot should I go to, you know, as it is just general information about the area. You know, and they're most of the time, they're locals that live there.
Yeah.
So they can help you out with all kinds of logistical stuff, too. Especially, you know, if you're getting along pretty good with them on the phone, I will ask them, like, well, where's a good hotel to stay? Or where's the nearest, you know, grocery store in this little town? Or is there a post office there? Just yada, yada, yada. A lot of things. Is there, in our case, we have to edit footage all the time.
Yeah.
So I ask them, like, where is the nearest Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi that I can get to? Is there a coffee shop or a cafe that has? Because in many cases on these DIY hunts, you're going to end up in a remote area like this.
Yeah.
Where you just don't have access to all that stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't plan ahead for it, then takes time to figure it out.
Another thing I'll say that I always really like doing is, like, when we were down in Kansas, we were just driving through this little town, kind of driving around the borders of this public land piece, and we were driving down Main Street in this tiny, tiny little town, and I looked over, and there's a bait shop, and there's, like, a couple of really big bucks that I could see on the wall in there.
Just pulled
over and talked to the guy, and he had watched some of the videos, but, like, he gave us a lot of really good information, like on specific areas that get more pressure than others and areas that he would probably think about hunting if he was hunting public land. He had permission to do a bunch of private out there, but like local guy pointed us in the direction, and like we went and drove around that piece and it looked like it was really good. So talking to the locals always can help too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing Dave Owens does on a lot of his turkey hunts, but you can use that for hunting any game species.
Yeah.
He'll, like, pull in to a little town, and he'll go directly to the main cafe or whatever that's in the town. Go in there and get a coffee and breakfast or something. Like, he'll sacrifice a morning, maybe, to do that. And just sit out and talk with folks that are in there probably every day.
Yeah.
They've probably been drinking coffee there, or eating there. It's, you know, same as your local cafe, wherever you're from.
Talk to the mail person if you see them. They're spending all that time driving around
like
a real American mail carrier. That's what my mom did.
Like your mom.
Yeah, and like I know if you were to ask her, she would be a wealth of information as far as where the turkeys are at. She's been seeing any bucks running around. Like, she keeps an eye out for stuff like that, because, I mean, you're always driving around on these back roads if you're a rural carrier. Like, I know she'd be a good resource.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Anyway, guys, we're going to be arriving in a couple hours here, so we're going to get camp set up and then hopefully bring you all some videos here pretty soon from North Dakota.
Thanks for listening.